Welcome to Serotalk Tech Chat number 10. This is Michael Loff for April 2nd, 2009. Tonight's topic, backing up your data. Big scare, and for the most part, it was unnecessary. A lot of people were worried about Conficker, and I'm not saying ignore it is a non-issue, but I'm saying most people who were worried about it didn't need to, because it's only going to affect people who did not or are not using antivirus software or did not get this particular Microsoft update back in October. Although even there, I understand that there's some variants of it. There's A, B, C, D, and E, and Microsoft's update may only have been able to protect you against A and B. But anyway, my point is that you have to have antivirus software and things to protect your computer. And even more than that, it can happen to the best of people. So you really have to have a method to back up your data. If not, that's just foolish. That's just like leaving the front door to your home open and saying, oh, well, I'll take my chances that someone won't walk in and take everything that I have, because it's the same thing. If you lose your data, there's no way to get it back if you don't take some preventative measures. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight, because in part, people don't think about it, but in part, people just don't know where to start. And we're not going to tell you what's good or what's best. We're just going to present some options to you. But before we get into that, a couple things I want to follow up. We did a tech chat last week talking about resources for online news and information. And Carrie emailed me and said, hey, Michael, awesome show, but you forgot a very important website, NFB Newsline Online. Now, maybe some of you are familiar with the Newsline service where you can listen to newspapers over the telephone, but now you can download them to your Victor Stream or Icon or Braille Plus, and you can also read them online. I did that and downloaded the 6 newspapers I had in my Newsline list, downloaded a little application, and it works very cool. It's a very awesome way to take USA Today or whatever. Like I said, you get up to 6 newspapers or publications that you can automatically download and put on your portable device and take with you. So thanks, Carrie, for mentioning that. I'd heard of it, never played with it, did it today, and it's an awesome service. Well, a lot of changes, a lot of classic shows leaving the airwaves. Tonight is the finale of ER, which has been around for 15 years, and another big popular soap opera that's leaving in September is called Guiding Light, that's been on TV for like 57 years and been around for 72 years, with the first 15 years of it from 1937 to 1952 available on the radio as an old-time radio show. And speaking of that, we'll see if he's available. I see him in the room here. Mr. Bill Sparks just launched his old-time radio site today, which I believe has some episodes of Guiding Light and just thousands of other shows, at his new website called rememberradio.com, where you can purchase shows, 3 for 99 cents or 10 for $2.99. Bill, if you're available, I'd like you to, or maybe I just stole your thunder there, but if you're available, I'd like you to talk about your new creation, rememberradio.com, just launched today. You heard it first, right here at Serotalk. What's going on with the new rememberradio.com?
We just started it. Got about 45,000, 50,000 OTR shows up there. You did a better job at the price description. You can just immediately download. Instead of ordering on CD, you can still order from us via CD, but this you can download and put on your Victor Stream or your PDA or MP3 player of choice and have it immediately and save shipping. Thanks for giving me the opportunity. And just remember www.rememberradio.com or billsparks.com, and we'll be able to help you out. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Bill. And not only can you buy shows for download at rememberradio.com, but if you old-fashioned and just want the CDs mailed to you, you can do that at billsparks.com. You've just launched, they just posted their third podcast at legend-oldies.com, and they have a new podcast called All Things Radio. And why don't you talk about that briefly? You got Gary Stevens, Walt Kramer, yourself, the lovely Jennifer Sparks, some contributions from Kelly Superga and others, and it's a show, the name kind of says it all, it's about all things radio. Talk about that, it's a really well-done podcast, and it's only their third episode.
Yeah, basically it's people who love radio. In all types of radio, from current radio, we draw from our website, the .org, radio lookup website, and kind of go from there. And we've got Gary Stevens, Walt Kramer, yourself, that's made contributions from people in radio. And we have interviews and features every week. And so you'll get about 45 minutes to an hour of just talk about radio. And Jeff's news is, I mean, it is the best. Once you've heard one of Jeff's newscasts about radio, I mean, it's just super. Jeff Bennett is just wonderful.
Yes, definitely check it out. Jeff Bennett, his radio news that they put right at the very beginning. So if you're not interested in any other topics, you can stay up on the latest news in the industry, find out about format changes and who's been hired and fired and all that cool behind-the-scenes stuff of interest to people who follow radio and interested in the industry. And again, this week they played some of the coverage from the flooding out in Fargo in that area in North Dakota. And of course, one of our users was displaced as a result of it. So you got to hear some live radio in action and how radio can be local if and when it needs to. We wish it would be more often. It's unfortunate that it takes a disaster to localize and make radio live and local again, but it is what it is. But you get to hear that. And they did a great beginning, first part of a tribute to the classic WJR AM 760 in Detroit, Michigan, that many people may have listened to at one time or another. Tonight we're going to talk about backing up your data. Why do we want to back up our data? Again, any kind of virus, Trojan worm, config, anything can come in and happen and just destroy the data on our computer. But even more than that, a bad installation of a program, too many wrong things, maybe an unexpected shutdown, maybe a hit of lightning, which is a whole other topic of thinking about buying some kind of surge suppressor for your system like APC, American Power Conversion, or something that will protect your computers from power spikes is certainly a good thing to mention as well when we're talking about backing up our data. Although it doesn't back it up itself, it protects it from being destroyed and minimizing that. So, but anyway, we're going to talk tonight specifically about different methods for backing up your data. You know, some people, I don't need to. I got software. I've got a USB drive. Well, that's all fine. What if a tornado comes in or a flood? What if you're one of those people in North Dakota who lost your home in the flood or a fire or an earthquake? Anything can happen to destroy your precious data. So why not get it backed up and either get it in some other location? Some people store things in the safety deposit box at their bank. But one other method that some people are using is online services that will actually back up your data through the internet. And one of the big ones, there's a number of them, but one of the big ones that we do know works and we have people in Serotech using it is called AmazonS3.com. And you basically pay a few cents per gigabyte. So you could literally back up 100 gigabyte of all your data, music, and whatever data is important to you. And for the peace of mind, $3-4 a month, you've got it there. Not only is it backed up so you can get it back if you need it, but you can also retrieve it from any other place you happen to be. And that's one way that protects you again. So if anything happens to your home, you know, a hurricane comes and blows it away, whatever, you have backed up in some other place and can get to it if and when you need. One of my personal passions is using backup or imaging software that literally makes an image of your computer as it is so that if you have problems in the future, you can restore this image and your computer will function just like it did at that exact date and time that that image was created. So let's start by talking about some programs that accomplish that task. One problem with all of these programs is backing up is easy, but sometimes to restore is not accessible and we still need sighted help. And I would love to talk with people who can successfully, and there are ways to do it, but people who have specific ways to restore their data on their own without sighted assistance, because a lot of the programs that I've looked at, they use a special boot disk or something that runs on a kind of limited version of Linux. So there's no speech and you're doing some kind of menus and it's not hard if you have some eyeballs there to help you. But if you don't have that, you might be stuck. So what do you do? Well, if you're like me, you kind of compromise. You take either build a clean version of Windows from scratch, throw a screen reader on there, and then restore your image. So it's kind of the long way home. Maybe it adds about 15, 20 minutes to the process, maybe more if you have an older computer, but it does get the job done. Nlite, N-L-I-T-E, and what it allows you to do is make an automated installation of Windows. So you put the disk in, wait for it to spin up, hit enter, wait a couple seconds, press enter again. It just hoses your C drive and then installs Windows, and you can either build it from scratch if you want at that point, if you've been having problems, or at that point you can, if you took some other program to make a backup of your computer when all was good, then you can install that software or install a screen reader, install the software, and restore it back to when everything was good. And one thing you may want to have is some kind of sound device, either a USB sound card or maybe a USB headset, so that you can get speech, because when you build a new version of Windows, you may not have drivers to make your sound card talk. So you have to have some way, if you cannot see the screen, to actually hear what's going on. Those are a few things I have in my arsenal is USB sound card, a headset, a good copy of Windows that will install, and then the image so that I can bring it all back. Acronis is one. There's another one I think has more promise. I have played with it and did a backup with System Access, but I've not done a restore with it yet, and I will do that and report on the progress. But it's called Paragon Drive Backup, the latest version 9.0. It was a little tricky, but we did actually get a backup. So we'll play with that a little more and see what we can come up with. When I mentioned my topic tonight, I got an email from Matthew Volbricht, who cannot be with us tonight, but did want to mention a few things. For users of the Macintosh, you have a built-in program called Time Machine that lets you restore the equivalent of the Windows System Restore that Microsoft has, but it works much better and lets you roll everything back to when it was good. And another program that I've played with in the Mac, and I'm not going to dwell much on the Mac because most of our users are Windows, but there's another one called Super Duper that actually lets you make a perfect backup image of your computer to another drive. And then you can actually boot to that external drive and it works just as if you had the hard drive in your computer. So essentially you have an exact replica of your computer on an external drive. Matthew also mentions a couple other apps for Windows, one of which he says is completely accessible with system access. It's called Norton Save and Restore. And there are newer versions of Ghost, but this is one that Matthew specifically says does work. It's fully accessible. Save and restore. He mentions another one that comes with the Lenovo computers, IBM ThinkPads. It's called One Key Recovery, and it does the backups and incrementals. Those are certainly a few applications that people can use. Another thing that some people are doing now is they're creating what are called virtual machines. And that's basically where you make an image of a particular operating system like Windows XP or Windows Vista or Windows 2007, and you can load it, play with it, do what you want. Maybe if you're a tester, you can just delete it. But you can go back and forth, so you can have these systems on your computer and just say, I want to go just toggle back and forth between Vista and XP. Maybe I want to see if a program works in one application, not in another. Or maybe I want to see if, wow, is Vista really that much slower than XP? Or is Windows 7 faster than Vista but slower than XP? Or is Windows 7 better? Whatever, you can play around and try programs and try different experiments. So a lot of people play with that. It's called VMware, VMWARE. The version for Windows is called Workstation. And so then if you want to have multiple versions of Windows or if you're a tester, you know, it's really the smart way to do that. There's also a version for the Macintosh, which I have used, called VMware Fusion. And so those of us who have done that actually can use the Macintosh and right alongside it have a version of Windows, basically move between Windows and Mac and just go back and forth as we need to, having both of them running at the same time. So there's a lot of different ways to make backups and approach this, but the main thing is having some system. Now, two other options I want to mention. One thing I've never had a lot of belief in, but I did see one situation when I was with Bill Sparks where it did save the day. Better than nothing. I would still want to do something beyond this, but this is the tool built into Windows, Microsoft Windows, called System Restore. It is not a true backup solution. Some people say, well, that's a backup. No, it's not a backup solution. What it does is it remembers certain settings and ways that you had things at a certain date and time. So it will restore, and it may work for you, it may not, because it is not a true backup in the sense that you're taking your computer back to a specific date and time with everything exactly the way it was. So it certainly is an option if something's not working before you decide, well, I need to go and reformat and redo my computer from scratch. Maybe go into System Restore and take it back a couple weeks. Or if you know what day things quit working, you got to make kind of history list of different times where these snapshots supposedly were taken and you can roll it back. And that might save you the trouble of having to rebuild your computer from scratch, which certainly can take a lot of time. Another program I've been using, it's not so much for making complete backups, but just the concept of backing up all your important data, called Backup for All. And what it does, and four is a number four, Backup for All. And basically you say, okay, I want to back up my D drive or whatever. I want to back this up. I want to make a zip file out of it or some other format. Or I want to back it up to a DVD or I want to back it up to my external USB drive. So that way, if my computer does crash, even if I have to rebuild Windows, at least I have copies of all my software. So we'll talk about that. What things should you keep? Well, first of all, let's go back to the USB drive. If you don't have one, not just a little key, because they're kind of limited on how much you can store on one of those. I guess if you have 16 gig, you can back up some data. But these USB drives are so, I hate to use the word cheap, but they're so inexpensive right now that it's just crazy not to buy one. You can buy a terabyte for under $100, like $89 or something. So, you know, it's, why not? Not that you need a terabyte, but the point is that you can very, very economically get a backup USB drive, and you can use it for all kinds of things. Back up your music. Maybe you want one or two images of your computer when it was just so, but back up all your music, your photos, your videos, all the important things. So even if you do have to restore your computer and build Windows from scratch, you at least have the capability of having all of the important files. Because I've seen a lot of people say, I'll pay anything. Just I want those pictures of my baby, you know? Something you have to get in the habit of. But this program, if you're not, if you can't condition yourself to look through every couple of days and say, oh, geez, I've been doing a lot, I need to back it up. This backup for all, you can automate it, like a lot of programs, and say, okay, I want to do a scheduled backup once a week or once a day at 2 a.m. Either do a complete backup or just back up everything that has just changed over the last few days. Again, something, anything is better than nothing. Because remember, hard drives will fail. They do have a limited life. And we have to take some precautions, one way or another, to secure our data. First round of questions. I'll start with you, Terry. What is your question, sir?
I worked and worked and worked with the system recovery situation, and it worked for a few times, but it was progressively getting worse. So anyway, I traced that and had a technician for $125, which is a bargain. Spent about 6 hours. I just had him pick up my machine, and he had it ready for the coming week.
All the apps we're talking about are generally at most $49. So imagine if you could have had your own backup for $49 and you wouldn't have needed to pay this person. You could do it all yourself. And how empowering is that to know not only did I not have to pay someone, I took control of my destiny, I got my system, first I backed it up, then I restored it, and I didn't have the inconvenience of maybe all the programs that you now have to go in and set all the configurations and the settings and everything back to the way they were.
One program I'll mention also, I haven't tried a restore yet, but I think it does use a Linux thing, so I don't know how the restore is going to work, but certainly the backup does work, is it's a part of the Nero suite, and Nero's a great product, a Nero Back It Up, it's called, and when you purchase the Nero 9 suite, whether it's an upgrade or a full install, they do give you a free copy of that. Another thing I'll mention to people for backing up, people think when you back up, okay, back up your documents and stuff. One other thing I would also highly recommend you back up is when you, especially for programs that you download and that type of thing, make sure you back up the install files for them and make sure you back up. I've got a separate folder for this and I make 4 different backups of this. Make a separate folder and store all of the product keys for installs for programs just in case, if an image is a good thing for your computer, but if you get a different computer or something like that, a lot of times an image won't work because the drivers are all different and that type of thing. You need to make sure you have those keys to reinstall, your programs. So back up the install files. And even what I do for myself is I've got this on a flash drive and I made a DVD mainly for convenience, but I copied all of the CDs like for Office and Kurzweil 1000 and Windowize, all that stuff, and put them onto, a flash drive and a DVD, so I don't have to go rummaging around, looking for different disks to install things. But back up those install files and make sure that you back up those serial numbers and product keys too to a safe place in case you need to reinstall.
Very good point. I started to mention it and I got sidetracked, but yes, I do the same thing. I would recommend people maybe make a directory called software and put all your copies of every program that you use on there. And then what I do is have a text file called keys.txt. So anytime that I get a new program and I get the confirmation email or the confirmation web page that has the product and the key, I make sure I copy and paste that into that file. And again, like you, back it up in multiple places. I have a DVD backup of it and CD, a USB key, and also a USB drive, because you can never have it in too many places. And it might be that in one place you forget, so maybe you've got most of the keys, but one or two of your most recent products you didn't get. So back it up in multiple places. And again, have a definite directory for copies of all the programs you buy, zip files, executables, even if you buy or they're free. Sometimes they're hard to find, or sometimes those websites no longer exist. And then have whatever you do, and you call it whatever you want. I'd call it keys.txt, and I know exactly what it is, and it has all my applications. And, or you can save the web pages, the confirmation orders, if you want to save those emails, that's one thing you can do as well. Does anyone else have any other questions or comments about anything this evening?
Jeffrey?
Oh, you made it, Mr. Jeffrey. I'm good. I'm glad to see you, buddy. I know this is a busy time of the year for you. I'll go ahead and let you comment on anything that you want. I know when we talked about this last week, you mentioned a number of options that I was not even aware of. So what's on your mind there, Jeff?
Well, you give me free license to talk, and I'll talk, right? So I was just going to break it down along sort of 3 types of backup people want, and I was going to mention a few quick comments along each. First one is your basic data, right? That's That's your Outlook files. That's your favorites. That's your pictures, your photo, your music. And I'll just touch on a few things along those lines. I myself personally have a three-tier backup system because for me, those pictures are absolutely essential. Like, they're family photos, pictures of the kids, that kind of thing. To lose that would be an absolute devastating situation. So for me, the first thing is I use my internet service provider actually offers me 100 gigs of storage on their server that is through a login and password. I use an application called SyncBack SE from Two Bright Sparks, and that's a piece of software that allows you to do data backup, so backing up those photos, and it'll do a variety of different forms. So I do it in two places. I zip up all that important data, and I send a copy to their server with a password, you know, as a password-protected zip file. So if my house burns down, I still have a copy of that data. The second thing I do, I don't believe in storage on a local machine. So I've picked up these really inexpensive, similar to the external USB drives, but actually an external network addressable storage device. It looks like a little toaster, and it's got two hard drive bays. You put whatever amount of storage in there. They even sell some where it's all packaged together. You plug it into your network, and that's your storage. I bought Netgear SC101 or 101Ts, which allows you to not just have an entire drive mirrored, because I've got two hard drives in the box. Instead, I've got a 100 gig out of a terabyte drive on two separate hard drives mirroring each other. So I say, okay, I want a 100 gig partition, and I want that mirrored on those two drives. And it does it all automatically for me. And so if one drive fails, I still have a complete backup of the information on a second drive. So that's where I store my data. So that's kind of what I do. I use SyncBack SE. It copies it from my local machine onto the network storage on that 100 gig drive, and it's in two hard drives. Then for applications, which I was going to mention, sometimes you don't want to install or back up the entire Windows, but you want to move certain applications that you've installed. Maybe you've lost the CD, maybe you've lost the key or what have you, or maybe you want to move a fair bit of your Windows PC Relocator. And what that program allows you to do is selectively back up applications and application settings. And I've actually used this at work to move settings from a Windows 2000 machine to an XP machine, where I just moved the application settings and the application data and the application itself from that one install to another because they'd lost the CD. It doesn't always work, but it has worked a number of times very successfully. So that's kind of item two. And then there's backing up your Windows OS, which I kind of take the opposite direction. And I'm actually going to send you, Michael, some instructions on how to do this. I've built a pre-installer disk from some information I found on the internet. Basically, boot a copy of Windows, like the Nlight thing that you were talking about earlier, where you boot the Windows, and then you run a script that runs a bunch of silent application installers. It's an intermediate, it's not really an advanced task, but basically what you do is you build silent installers for some of the major apps that you use that are tedious to install, big things like Microsoft Office, which takes like 25 minutes to install, kind of thing. And then I just basically bundle that into one DVD that does a full unattended install of XP, then runs the script, then installs the applications, then reboots, and you've got a ready-to-go system with the applications you use regularly. So for me, I'd rather do that, back up what's necessary, rather than image the whole thing.
Hey, what apps can you not automate through script installs? Are there certain things that just won't work?
I have yet to find something it depends a lot on how they made the installer originally as to how much effort it is. But most of the stuff is made with the Microsoft, you know, install system or the install shield or the Nullsoft. And those tend to be far more straightforward to make. So you can make an installer relatively easily or a silent installer relatively easily from those. It's when dude went and wrote his own installer. I have yet to try it, but I would assume that something like Nokia PC Suite, where it looks like they've written their own installer, I would assume that would be much harder to do.
Now, what about drivers? Making a disk that has the drivers for a given box, or just the drivers directory where it can pull what it needs?
That might be an extra step, but there is a pretty good program a friend of mine uses called Driver Genius, I believe, that allows you to actually build an executable that installs all your drivers, you should be good to go on that.
Now, you've done some things as far as like bootable USB sticks or things. We'll talk about that. So you've actually made a bootable USB stick that you can plug in and get, what, a version of Linux or something? You actually have speech on it, or talk about that process just so you can get in and maybe do some diagnostics on your machine.
Actually, there's an actual edition of Linux out there that was originally called Vibuntu, and I think they've renamed themselves to Vinux. And you can actually go to their site and download an ISO image made to come up with a screen reader right away. So it takes 2 minutes to boot off the CD, and then you've got your Linux screen reader, which is Orca, which it doesn't work like Windows per se, so it does have a learning curve there. But you get a free bootable live CD that doesn't require a hard drive or an install of an operating system in order to operate. It's good for people who also want to learn about Linux. And there's also instructions on the site for taking that image and moving it to a USB key so that you can boot from that USB key and get the exact same thing. What's nice about Vibuntu and Linux is that it'll also detect Braille drivers. So if you've got a Braille display, it should detect the Braille display as it boots up. And it's got magnification as well for low vision users.
Very cool. Well, there's two builds of that I found. I haven't played with them yet, but I downloaded a 1.4 of Vinix, or Vinux as you call it, or there was a 1.33 of Vibuntu that supposedly you use like a virtual machine, something called VM Player or something, and that way you can load it within Windows and have the benefit of going back and forth or just giving it a play. So there's two different apps.
I would tend to favor the ISO, but I mean, it's just VMware, so I mean, you get a much of the same experience. By the way, speaking of VMware, Microsoft has a sort of equivalent product that I believe is free called Virtual PC, and I've used that quite effectively as well.
For what, specifically having multiple, toggling between multiple Windows applications, or exactly what does it do, or how is it similar or different from the VMware that we talked about, either the Fusion for the Mac or the Workstation?
Actually, it functions pretty much exactly like Workstation. So you create a drive, or you create an image, and you create a bootable version of Windows that you boot within Windows. So it allows you to kind of get it material that way. And I believe it's free, which is a nice thing. So you can, within the same way you were mentioning, you can within, say, Vista or whatever, try out Windows 7. And it has keyboard shortcuts to be able to move between Windows. It works pretty well. It comes up with sound and all access to your PC's resources if you want them, or you can select how much of your computer resources you can have access to. So pretty much the same sort of functions you're used to in sort of VMware Workstation. When you do run one of these virtual machines within your Windows or within your Mac, you do have to install a separate screen reader into them, because they're not going to provide you direct access to the operating system you've installed on that machine. So if you install, say, Windows 7 under Virtual PC or VMware, you do actually have to install a copy of, say, System Access in order to be able to have it speak into that virtual machine. So you have to install it on the copy of the virtual machine as opposed to in the surrounding PC.
Jamal, I think you had a comment, sir.
Is the Windows installer accessible when you're using Virtual PC on Windows?
No, unfortunately, you do need a pre-install disk in order to be able to do it with any of these virtual systems, with the exception of Fusion, which on the Mac allows you to do it completely unattended.
Yes, I did it all myself. There was no sighted assistance required. I understand it is a little bit different with the VM Workstation. Talk about the difference of, so even if I have a Windows disk that I made with Nlyte, what is the difference? I still have some prompts that don't talk when using VM Workstation. Why don't you comment on that a little bit? I haven't played with that yet.
No, I was just saying, if you have the expectation that you put in an XP disk or you put in an image of an XP disk on your in a VMware or Workstation or into a Virtual PC, you still have those first four or five prompts that you have to get through, or else you have to build yourself or pick up or download or acquire or what have you a silent install, pre-install disk like the Nlyte makes.
I know Windows had the with the .sif files that you could like put all the values into it, like a little text file or something. Will that work? Or do you really just need to go the Nlyte route or do something that compiles that disk with all the settings in it?
It depends on what level of customization you want in it, right? I mean, the nice thing about running virtual PC or VMware is that your sound drivers will automatically come up, right? They'll just be detected as a standard audio device. So as long as you have access to a screen reader, you're good to go no matter what direction you go. It's when you get those few prompts, and there's always going to be a little bit of sort of remembering process a couple of steps via keyboard, sort of like what you were mentioning. You go down arrow twice, hit enter, down arrow once, hit enter, and off you go. One thing you mentioned earlier was backing up CDs, and it might be useful to just mention that there's a couple of programs that do a pretty good job of backing up CDs. I myself use a program called Alcohol 120% from alcohol-soft.com, and what it allows you to do is say, oh, I've got this CD, I want to create an image of it on my hard drive in whatever file format I want. And then later on, I want to be able to mount that image as a virtual or fake CD-ROM drive or DVD drive. And the nice thing about Alcohol is it actually, even if there is most of the more common copy protections on the disk, it will allow you to do a backup of that disk for your own purposes.
Right, so you can use it either to duplicate CDs that might not otherwise do so, either because some kind of copy protection. Now, does 120 do the DVDs as well? Some people use that. That's strictly CDs.
It'll do data DVDs. I don't think it'll do video DVDs, although I haven't tried it in the recent versions. I did try it about a year and a half ago, and it didn't. What it does allow you to do is, one of the biggest pains, I think, as a blind person, is having 10 or 20 CDs that are completely, like, you know, unlabeled, or difficult to label because you can't put Braille on them, or you can't put a tactile marking because it off balances the CD. Well, I don't keep CDs. I create an image of that CD, I store it on a hard drive, and if I ever need access to it, I mount it on a virtual CD. So backing up that material at least is a little step easier because of it. And knowing what CDs you're dealing with is good, because if you've got a package of 100 CDs, you know, everything from the drivers from your hard drive to drivers from your motherboard to the applications that you purchased, well, you just back them up that way. And then you can access them and mount them in the computer without actually burning them to a CD.
When you talk about the DVDs, which I'm certainly not encouraging people to copy movies and sell them. That's not why I'm saying this. I don't endorse that, and I know nobody else. You know, Ceratec certainly doesn't either. But having said that, though, I do believe you should have the right to make backups of things you have purchased. There is a program for Windows that will do that. It's called, I believe it's a clone CD or clone DVD, they might be calling it now. And on the Mac, you've actually got one, and the name is kind of funny, but it's called a Mac the Ripper. And it will actually do that and allow you to make backups of the DVDs.
Jeffrey, what would you suggest for people? I know, like, the Outlook files, which are kind of a pain because of the way that they're designed, and Microsoft makes no effort to make backing up that a friendly task. What suggestions would you give to people for backing up their email?
Comes back to that original software package, actually. I myself like all your data in Outlook is stored in a file by the extension of .pst, which if you go hunting in your documents and settings, application folder, you know, under the user profile, you can dig it up sort of under local settings, applications, Microsoft Outlook. So once you know where that PST is, so you can go into your start and search for *.pst in your Windows search, or search for a file ending in the extension .pst, you can back that up. I mean, as long as Outlook is closed, you can make a backup, and it takes your entire contacts, calendar stuff, email, and other data, and it'll move it onto, you can move it anywhere. So in my case, I use that SyncBack SE. One of the things it does is at 3 a.m. every morning, it copies that PST onto my shared drive. The other thing to know is if you go into the control panel under mail, under data fold files, you can actually move your PST file or put in another PST file in that section. So if you load up Outlook and you want to get that PST file back, you just, you know, point it to the file that you want it to have access to, or you copy it locally and point it to that file. So often what I'll do is I'll move that PST file into my document folder and then do it that way. Now, if you want to back up the actual contact and data type things, I would say there's a couple of applications, including There's a couple for putting your calendar into Google, which I kind of like as an idea. I use Google as my email account, and I tie it into Outlook, and I get it right into Outlook, the professional edition. And then I propagate my calendar and contacts and other data with I think it's Google Sync. I'll dig that up for you, too. And then it just basically synchronizes it with the Google service, so I have a duplicate web-based copy of my calendar and other data.
For Outlook Express users, if you want to back up your stuff, I don't remember what the exact file name is, but it has the extension .dbx. So if you back your files up with a .dbx extension, that's what Outlook Express stores its mail in.
Yeah, no, Outlook, I think the two big files are the Outlook.pst and the Archive.pst. So if you get those files, you should be good. However, the one thing that is not stored is your password. So you better make sure you know your password or those files are useless to you.
I had interest in the idea of backing up the system so that someone could restore the whole thing. I'm talking about a Windows system easily without having to deal with reinstalling Windows. Do y'all know of any way to do something like that?
Well, the problem you're going to have, of course, with XP is that there's the registry. So once you put it on different hardware, it's not going to work because of all the drivers. The only time you can usually move a backup copy of Windows, an image of it to another drive or to another computer, as if the really specs of the motherboard are the same. And that's why we talk so much about the virtual machines. You can make a virtual machine image of it, and so then when you get a new computer, at best you could load that as a virtual machine and then do what you need to, but it's not going to be native. You can't just say, I want to back up my Windows on this computer and then go buy a new computer and restore it, because all the drivers, the device drivers, you know, amounts of RAM, and mainly the registry, and there's just so many factors. I would argue it's intentional that you cannot just port a good clean copy of Windows as you have it now over to another computer and have it automatically boot into it as your default system. That's not an option, and that's the important reason why you or me or any of us need to take our existing computer and make sure that we got a backup of all the important data there, the drivers, our software, product keys, and everything else, so that we can rebuild it. One of the main things you're going to want from that Windows is you're going to want to get that product key. If you bought a computer, no disk came with it. There's a little app, or maybe ask Jeffrey. I know there's an app called Jelly Bean. I think there's some different ways you can go and get that product key, and you want to write down that 25-digit key.
Jelly Bean Key Changer is one. The other one, you can get a 30-day trial of Everest, and it will actually generate you a report of your Windows, what versions you're at, what the various driver files are in there. But more importantly, it'll actually list the serial numbers for Windows and the Office suite, which can be quite useful to have.
Yeah, LavaSoft. And I actually bought 4.5, and I just downloaded 5.01, and I'm not sure if my key will work on it. I got to try that here. But a great program if you want to know more than you'd ever want to know about your computer. Literally, I think 100 pages of every possible setting in there, every device and all of its settings. Great for knowing such things like what temperature your machine's running at and, you know, what your devices are. So if you're having a problem, you can go find exactly what the device is and then go try to find new drivers. So, yes, Everest is a good tool for those of you who'd like to geek out a little bit and get into the diagnostics of it. And I thank everyone, especially Jeffrey, for your insights. I look forward to those emails. We'll post links, try to find every application here that we've mentioned so that we can have that for starters. And certainly we'll come back a few months and address this issue again. Again, if you have any comments, send them to resources at cerotalk.com. Of course, content at cerotech.com. They all go to the same place. Or give us a call on the Blab line at 866-997-BLAB. And of course, Blab spelled 2522, works from the U.S. or Canada. And join us every Thursday. Oh, by the way, one final comment. I do have posted for the masses all 32 interviews from CSUN 2009. Go right to the CeroTalk.com page and you'll find it just a couple items down. And enjoy. Thanks a lot, folks. This is Michael Loff.
Back it up.